Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, September 26, 2013, and thank you for joining the program this afternoon. Let's get right to the market report. Wendy Wilson will be joining us in here in just a few short minutes. Al, I hear you. Hee-hee-heeing in the background.
Well, I heard you doing it. I don't know. I you say, thank you for joining the program, and then you, and I thought, that's kind of interesting. What are you laughing about, Melanie?
Well, I got my little pup master in the office, and, you know, it's funny, I received calls from many of the listeners on what to name my pup, and I finally came to a name. Her name is going to be Ruby Grace.
Ruby Grace, huh?
Ruby Grace Cedarstrom. So maybe that Cedarstrom is the name I need to change. But anyway.
You're not going to call her Goldie.
I'm not going to call her Goldie, no. Thought about it.
Oh, uh-huh.
But Ruby is her name. Ruby. Anyway, let's go ahead and get to the market reports today. Gold was not a very ruby day, except it was to the red. To the downside, down $9 at $13.24. You have silver down 5 cents today. Not bad. $21.85. You have platinum down 19 at $14.15. And you have palladium down a buck at $725 today. And you have the paper. Well, let's get to the... let's first do the USDX today, up 0.21 at 80.55. Crude oil up a few cents, 36 at 103. And the paper markets today, they were up most of the day on GDP announcements. And but they were still slim.
I think it was also not just the GDP announcements, but also I think horoscopes and
possibly
the fortunes in Chinese fortune cookies. I think that also played a role in bringing them up a little bit.
Probably. I'll tell you what, they're as good as any in these markets today. You had the Dow up 55 points at 15,328, but it did break a five-day losing streak. And, of course, it doesn't make sense because you still have their continued fears of a government shutdown. The NASDAQ was up 26 at 37.87. The S&P was up 5 at 16.98. 10-year yield still hanging out about 2.65%. All the talk mainly is on the government shutdown. We'll be talking about that a little after the first segment. We got a lot of things to talk about, perhaps California, oil. But first, maybe even $11 billion. We're going to talk about $11 billion. Pennies to some. But good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Thought I'd say hi before we get to our guest, Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Good afternoon, Al. How you doing?
Hi, Wendy.
We're doing just fine here at Discount in Dallas. And I believe you received an inquiry about oregano oil.
I did. Somebody was taking it for oral hygiene issues. They had, an infected tooth and feel that they overdid the oregano oil for more than the recommended time, and they feel they may have damaged their liver. Wasn't that what it was?
Yes.
Okay.
They had some after effects, and he did a little research into oregano oil and found out that you can actually take a little too much oregano oil, and you can have some serious side effects.
Yeah, and, we can overdo chocolate, you know. There's a lot we can overdo. We can, it's easily to get that balance out of whack. And so it's good to do your homework on these things. And, I always say, don't just trust my word for it. Go do your homework on it before you do it. And we have 13 different varieties of oregano. And I think the European varieties are a little bit stronger than the American varieties. So it really does depend on the type of variety that person was using, too.
Well, how much do you think might be an overdose? Are we talking, because they sell oregano in these little 1 ounce fluid bottles typically. It's not as if anyone's likely to buy a quart of oregano. I won't say it's impossible, but are we saying that you only take a drop a day for 5 days? Or are we talking about an ounce over a period of a week is too much, or what's too much?
Well, this person was taking it several doses several times a day, so you want to definitely follow the label recommendations on doses. A lot of people will get a side effect. They use it a lot for the respiratory infections, coughs and asthma and croup and stuff like that. But oregano oil can also offer, allergic reactions. So you want to be careful on if you have a sensitivity to it, just like you can have it to any food, you can have a sensitivity to an herb. So you want to make sure that you start out slow, conservative on when you use your doses. Usually rule of thumb, Al, on the herbal tinctures, if you're using a tincture, for instance, a quarter teaspoon is a pretty good low adult dose to start with, just to test. You could go up to a full teaspoon if you have to on the oregano oils. The rule of thumb on the oils is they could be more potent, just depends on how they were made and manufactured, and again, the species of oregano. So I would err on the conservative side, and maybe no more than a quarter teaspoon as well on that.
All right. What else do we have? Do you have something you want to talk about, or would you like some more questions?
Well, I'm researching, a topic. We're talking about several things. People are under the gun financially. So what's one of the first things people tend to drop when it comes to health and maintenance? And the first thing that usually goes is dental, because dental procedures are very expensive. Oral hygiene is real important. It's a maintenance thing just like anything else. And people are shocked to find out that, death by toothache is a real thing.
Death by toothache?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, whenever
you're actually using that as a bit of a metaphor. You're not actually saying that the pain in the tooth can be sufficient. You're saying that the cause of that pain, nevertheless, can wind up. There's more involved than just pain in the tooth.
Oh yeah, well, pain is an indicator. It'll signal you've got a problemo, and it's an infection. So you've got blood flowing to the jawbone. And a lot of that infection can seep down into the root and into the jawbone and through the blood system, and you can become sepsis. You can get sepsis. You can get septic really quick. So it's important to always, you know, check these things out and don't ignore them.
How likely is this to happen if you've neglected oral health care? I mean, do you have any idea of how many deaths might be attributed per year to poor oral hygiene?
Well, in the United States, not as bad as some of the other parts of the world. In the U.S., we usually have pretty good dental care. Most people, well, we did anyway. I don't know what we're going to do with Obamacare coming in. And I don't know what they're going to decide on Capitol Hill. I'm hoping it's just not a dog and pony show there. What do you think about that part, Al? Do you think it is?
Well, it's a dog and pony show for we the people, and it's generally a cash and carry show for the people who stand to make money off the laws that Congress passes. Two different shows, you know?
Yeah.
I got a question. Someone told me recently that you can have long-term effects from poor hygiene, dental hygiene. In fact, they can even link dementia to folks who didn't take the care that they needed in their younger days. Have you heard that?
There's a lot of things that can come about health-wise when we let our oral hygiene slip. Basically, there's been some medical research studies published on oral infectious diseases that have been, that have caused other diseases like heart disease and stroke and rheumatoid arthritis and diabetes and upper respiratory infections. Also, it does complicate pregnancy as well, and also can open, a foothold to some of the cancers, according to some of the research I've been looking at. So when you look at the statistics that way, Al, I guess oral infection, you know, is pretty prevalent, could be very subtle as being the instigator promoting the cause of death, if you will. Not a direct.
In other words, there could be a lot of people, there could be at least a number of people whose mm-hmm. death certificates say they died from a heart attack.
Right.
But in fact, what they died from was poor oral hygiene that triggered a heart attack.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, routine cleanings, I know, are expensive. You know, you're looking at least $100 just to sit in that chair. And people with receding gums and periodontal disease, you know, that can quickly take hold and you can get a cascade effect. I've heard that one of the things that people are being treated for with receding gums is, you know, the dentist is not telling their patients that, you know, listen, you need to use a soft bristle brush. You don't need these rotating, you know, toothbrushes, which really can, you know, take a lot of the enamel off. You're kind of like, you're not a car. You know, you don't need to buff your tooth like that. But people have all this and they're just supposedly massaging their gums. But what they're doing is they're creating a receding gum line. And then once it gets too far and it can't come back, well, the next thing they're in the chair and they're having, you know, tissue from a cadaver put on their gum line. So let's not go there, folks. Let's just use some common sense.
That's just the way you look at it. I mean, if you go out, if you enjoy steak, for example, technically that's just, put it on the grill. Technically, that's just tissue from a cadaver. But I think you're talking about tissue from perhaps a human cadaver.
I know.
Mm-hmm, not ideal. What about, you talk about, you're not in favor of the electronic brushes, apparently, but what happens if you use them with a toothpaste, a dentifrice like sodium, what is it, carbonate? I can't remember. Baking soda, in any case.
Right, right. There's a lot of people that
not abrasive. I can understand if you're using a conventional toothpaste with one of those little electronic gizmos,
right,
you're gonna put a lot of abrasion into your teeth.
Right.
But if you use baking powder, baking soda, I don't remember which, but one or the other, non-abrasive, and may even do a better job.
Yes, baking soda is what people use, and sometimes they'll either just use water, or they may even put a little hydrogen peroxide with it as a whitening agent, you know, because you see a lot of hydrogen peroxide in the toothpaste now. You know, that's what they're throwing in there as a whitening agent. And it's just that, you know, I think we overdo. You know, my great-grandfather, I should say, he was from Portugal, the island of Madeira, and he never had a toothbrush. He never used them, and he had perfect teeth. You know, he didn't have to go to the dentist very often because he had such great technique in how he ate. He always finished a meal with some fibrous fruit because he says the fiber in the fruit acted like dental floss, which I thought was interesting. So I think diet is going to be a big indicator on us staying out of the dentist office out of trouble.
Okay, we're talking about diet.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be talking. We're not talking that we need more carbohydrates to maintain dental health. I doubt that we're saying we need more protein to maintain dental health.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably saying that we need more minerals
right.
to maintain dental health. You know, we mm-hmm. talked about the heart attack. This is on the death certificate, but it was caused by poor dental health. But maybe the poor dental health was caused by a lack of mineral supplements. Is that connection there?
Yeah, you definitely want to have some magnesium and boron in order to have strong, healthy teeth and have the dentin on the teeth be strong. Because our teeth are very porous. If you look at them, they're porous. They have holes. And, you know, this is why a lot of people that have that sensitivity and they can't drink hot and cold things is because they've really worn down a lot of that protective enamel. And so their teeth, the nerve endings of the teeth are feeling those temperature changes. And that's why they have to use a toothpaste called Sensodyne, which tends to fill in those little cavities. So it really helps prevent the, you know, hot and cold temperature from reaching the nerve endings, and that's all that's doing. So, but there is a way that you can rebuild the dentin on your teeth. Did you know how to do that, Al?
No, I don't.
Well, you want to
sounds
make
sure like dentures. It sounds like a homemade denture device. Is that what this is? 3D printing? Print your own dentures on a 3D printer?
No, not quite as exciting as that. Basically,
right.
it's if you look at your plant sources, your fruits and vegetables, you'll see the calcium in those plants is always going to be accompanied by the mineral uptake that the body needs to absorb that calcium so you have strong teeth and bones. So you're going to have one part calcium, one part boron, and one part magnesium. It's always that ratio in your green leafy vegetables, oranges, and any of those food sources, including your herbs that have calcium with it. It is just the perfect way for the body to absorb the calcium and put it in bone, muscle, connective tissue, even your gum tissue is connective tissue. So people, as you pointed out very astutely, aren't getting that mineral uptake. They're drinking lots of milk, and that's 10 parts calcium, but it's got just a little bit of magnesium and no boron in it. So this is why people have osteoporosis, even though they're eating a bunch of cheese and yogurt and drinking gobs of milk. So switch that calcium supplement to something more natural and whole food-based. And if you need a supplement, I take these herbs and make a tincture out of it that have that calcium and magnesium and boron ratio. And what you can do is drip it on your teeth, let it sit there, and then you can take a little water and swish it around and then swallow. And this, if you have even a tiny cavity or discoloring on the tooth, it can reverse that.
All right. Speaking of teeth, we've only got about a minute left now, maybe 60 seconds or something like that. But why is Coke a joke? New ad campaign defends aspartame. What do you think about the artificial sweeteners? Which ones are good for us? Which ones are bad? Are any of them good for us?
No, none of them are good for us. All going to be carcinogenic in the end, and definitely not going to be a good thing to. And they give these sodas over to people with diabetes, and it just complicates their health problem. It's just a mess. People just need to avoid that. Avoid even the regular sugar drinks. Those carbonated drinks are very bad for your pancreas and liver. And one soda with sugar is like a third of a cup of sugar. You know, my mom took a baby tooth when I was growing up, and she poured a little Coca-Cola, regular sugar Coke, into a little jar that had a lid, and she dropped the tooth in there and put the lid on, and she put the date on it. And 2 weeks later, we couldn't find the tooth. It had dissolved.
Well, I understand. We know that everybody knows these things, but on the other hand, we also know that sugar tastes good, and it's hard to be sensible all the time. What we're going to have to do, though, Wendy, is we've got a break for some commercial announcements. I want to thank you for being on the program. Tell people where they can locate you and your website.
Sure, they can find us on the web, thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com, or they can call us toll-free at 866-229-3663. And this Saturday, we have a one-day super 25% off sale, so they can check it out online.
Okay, Wendy, thanks very much. That's Wendy Wilson from, where is this? The Apothecary Herb Shop at thepowerherbs.com. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here at Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What you got for folks today, Melody?
Hey, they can visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter, and, of course, you can listen to the radio archives from the website. And we're changing around our website, and hopefully, my gosh, things move so slowly anymore. Time goes by so quick, but yet things just seem to take forever to get things done anymore. But we're all overloaded. Everybody's trying to get as much done as they can in their days. And we just need a, I don't know if we need a few extra hours in that day or just a few less things to do. Probably that one's the best.
What we probably need is a few less years. That's probably the real. No, we need a few less years. I mean, I'm sure that I could. The problems I have right now that are overwhelming me. If I was 10 years younger, I don't think they'd be as much of a problem. You know, you get to a point where you just can't juggle as many balls as you used to, and it shows up.
Well, you know, yesterday the post office came out and they said they needed to increase postage by 3 cents next year. Now, the request has to be approved by an independent postal commission, and it has to be approved by Congress before they can do this, which takes this postage up to 49 cents. I don't know why they just didn't do 50 cents. It's that, you know, $9.95 deal, I guess, but just make it 50 cents to be done with it. But what I always found interesting is what's two of the things that are putting the post office out of business is, number one, the declining mail volume with the internet. You don't have the business bulk that we had at one time, and the post office made a lot of money off of those bulk mailings. With the onset of the internet, it hurt. But as of 2006, there was a congressional requirement that the post office had to make advance payments to cover expected health care costs for future retirees. So, you know, they missed a couple of payments in 2010, and their annual payment is $5.6 billion for their future retiree health benefits, and I would expect that to increase as people get older. Health costs are more expensive. But what was funny is Donahue, the general postmaster, Patrick Donahue, he says that he's going to Washington and hope that they can get some answers on how to control their budgets and how to control their situation that they might have. And my big question is, why in the world would you go to government to find out how to balance your budget? I mean,
yeah, that's a good point. That's like asking a woman who's got 16 kids, how do you practice birth control? Chances are she's not too familiar with the concept. Yeah. Same thing with government. Where would you find someone in the government who understands how to control budgets?
Well, they need to eliminate that future health benefit. And I don't know how Obamacare comes into play with this. 2006, you know, if this was something that was kind of pre-planned, but, you know, why was the post office selected in order to, there? As far as I know, they're the only type business that has to pay advanced premiums.
You know why that is, Melody? Because they know how prone those postal employees are to going postal.
Well, I don't
they
think
don't
it's so
make
much
mad,
that
Melody. They'll shoot, Bob. You don't want to make people mad. They'll
perhaps,
start.
Perhaps there is. I mean, you have a lot of weight requirements. I guess like maybe UPS and FedEx, you have a lot of packages, carry a lot of weight, a lot of walking. They do have health issues with their legs and you know, that type of thing, arthritis and so forth, mainly because of, you know, their job. So I can see that a little bit. But on the other hand, don't know.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, we'll watch and we'll see. I'll tell you one thing that I was surprised to see. I went to Sam's Club this last weekend to do a little grocery shopping, buy some things, whatever. And while I was there, I saw that you can buy postage right now that is guaranteed to be first class from now and forever.
The forever stamps, that's correct.
Yeah,
they've had those,
stamps.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, what the implication is if they tell everyone that the price of postage is going up 3 cents a stamp over the course of the next several months, if that's likely to happen sometimes, I don't know, in the next 6 months, is that true?
Well, it wouldn't happen until next year.
Well, I get that. But nevertheless, you sit there and you wonder, how many people will buy the forever stamp knowing that the price is going up 3 cents within the next, say, 6 months? And if you can wonder, you can speculate, and you can even wonder if it's worthy of speculation, is this a way to stimulate people to buy a bunch of postage now and increase the cash flow for the post office? And they'll be licking and sticking those stamps over the course, who knows, buy enough now to last you for the next 5 years. But the post office would get a cash infusion. I'm not arguing that's true. I'm just saying it crosses my suspicious mind.
Well, you know, what's interesting, discount gold and silver, we're, you know, here in Central PA, State College, Port Matilda, we're one of the largest businesses that process packages through them. And so they tell me a lot of things. And she says what she found out was, she says, lately, she says, people aren't buying stamps. They're not buying postage. She says they used to come in and buy postage with, you know, give me a $20 bill. And, you know, they would, you know, get their little packet of stamps and so forth. She says they're using more credit cards now. And she says this is just something that's just recently has changed that she noticed. Here in the past month. So the post office is a sign of, to me, what's, you know.
Canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They just
give
one
us a sign of what
just
might
one.
Be coming. Yeah, they're
just one. Just a minor, but it affects everyone,
yep.
You know, because everybody uses the post office.
Yeah.
You know, just like the little tidbits I get from my bank. You know, when they came out with the TARP, we talked about that last week, that they couldn't refuse money. So I guess it's good to do a lot of business.
Some of us can't refuse to give money to the government, and some of us can't refuse to take money from the government. It's a bizarre world, Melody.
Yes, it is. What's next, Al?
I don't know. We've got an alliance of rebel groups calls for an Islamic Syria, not a U.S.-backed democracy. That's a headline from the Washington Times. 11 Syrian rebel groups, including a powerful al-Qaeda affiliate, have rejected Western-backed opposition, the Western-backed opposition coalition, calling for a new Syria under Islamic law and dealing a severe blow to the U.S.-led efforts to support a democratic alternative to embattled President Bashar Assad. David Schenker, director of the program on Arab politics at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, said the prospect that the Islamists are going to set up some sort of overarching political and military coordination and organizational structure should be troubling, not only to the Syrian secular opposition, but also for Washington. Well, troubling? Do you think this is troubling, Melody, that the Islamists would want to set up an Islamic state? I'm not troubled. Instead, I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you. I mean, who'd have thunk it, Melody? Who could possibly have imagined that if our beloved government gave money and arms to a bunch of Muslim terrorists, and that includes elements of al-Qaeda that was deemed responsible for the 9/11 attacks on our own country, who would imagine that such Muslim terrorists are being subsidized by our government to overthrow the Syrian government? Who'd imagine that those dirty Muslims would want to establish a Muslim state? Well, the very thought of such treachery just boggles the mind. Those Muslims must be crazy. They'd rather worship Allah than worship the almighty and often free U.S. dollar. I see this as blasphemy to our governments and the New World Order's faith in secular humanism, democracy, and fiat dollars. It's got to be stopped. I think the solution must be to give the Muslim terrorists even more arms and even more fiat dollars. Surely we can buy their love with just a few billion more green pieces of paper. What you think, Melody? Can we buy the Muslims with more money?
No, I don't think. They'll take our arms, though, and, you know, they'll certainly have their way. And, you know, I guess there's big talks going on with Kerry and with Iran and so forth. And really, when we talk about dog and pony shows, that is certainly Kerry, to me, I think is, I mean, he was the last person I could ever imagine in that position. I mean, you know, I'd even have to say Hillary would have did a better job than he, I believe, is capable of doing.
Oh, bite your tongue. Bite your tongue.
Well, you know.
Hillary? But I'll tell you this, Kerry.
She knew how to work them. I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of Hillary, but she knew how to work them. She knew how it worked. She knew who the bosses were, and she's a major player in Benghazi, and you know, she stepped down at the right time, and you know, I don't think any of these people, because of Benghazi, should be getting off scot-free. They need to be held accountable, and she is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, along with the ones in Washington right now. So we can never forget about Benghazi. And we go back to what is normal. I mean, everything is just so bizarre. There isn't anything that's normal. And everything is like ready to explode. Yes.
It used to be that you could conceal anything. Just as the government spies on us, we effectively spy on the government, or at least we publicize what we find. One little guy can expose all kinds of extraordinary information. Eric Snowden is a classical example. Bradley Manning is another one. The government is in deep trouble. The internet will not allow them to keep any secrets. And the problem is, without secrecy, the government can't maintain the illusion that it's composed of honorable men and women. They are pretty much forced to simply let it all hang out, and if they're going to go out there and murder some people, they just got to say, well, we're going to kill them. That's all. They're not going to dance. They won't be able to dance around it anymore. They have to admit everything's going to be exposed, everything's going to be seen, and the government, to function, must behave in a way that is ultimately shameless. And it has to hurt everyone's perception of the government, with the exception of the government itself. Government knows what kind of criminals and gangsters are working this country, running this country, but we the people have not. And it's hard to say whether we're better off knowing they're a bunch of crooks or better off believing that they're not. But we are coming to a time where they can't get away from the crooked behavior has to be exposed and creating problems. And it seems bizarre. That's where we get this bizarre. How are they doing this? They're doing it right in front of us, for God's sake. I think they understand they can't hide anymore. They can't conceal. And so they just, all right, yeah, we're a bunch of crooks. So what?
And everybody accepts it.
Well,
everybody accepts it. It's part of the norm anymore. I mean, I can remember as a little child growing up, it was like, oh, well, that politician's a little crooked. He, he, he.
Yeah.
And it was accepted. Oh, well, you know, it's almost expected.
Now the amazing thing is find a politician who's not crooked. Right? Right now, in your thinking and mine, you sit back and say, well, here's Congressman so-and-so, and he doesn't take bribes. He's not crooked. And right now, most people would look at you, oh, you're crazy. Where do you find a congressman who doesn't take bribes? Are you nuts? An honorable man in Congress, an honorable man in the Senate, the White House.
I believe, Al, I think the local governments, and I think some of your smaller governments and so forth, I believe there are good people out there. I mean, I do believe there's good people in some of these positions that do try, and I think maybe they even get a little clouded in their thinking with some of the information that is provided by them. And I think there's sometimes when you have elections, you do have good people going there thinking that they're going to do all good, and then eventually, you know, they get overwhelmed by, you know, perhaps the offers, the grandeur, the so forth. I mean, I do have a tendency to believe in a little bit of, you know, human, you know, there's got to be some good out there. Unfortunately, I think a lot of them are overridden by a lot of the bad. And, you know, as we talked about before, sometimes they go in there good. They don't have skeletons, but it's just a matter of time until they do.
It's hard to resist the temptation. That's just a matter of human nature. And again, I talk about this periodically on the program, how important the political campaign laws are. And they really need to be tightened up, where if you're going to Congress, you're going to have to live on the money you're paid on your congressional salary. Your salary as a senator, your money as a president, you can't take any more money. And it's got to be locked down, because as long as they allow it, and they say, well, these are just political campaign contributions or whatever, give them tips on where to put your money in the stock market. It's got to be stopped, and as long as it persists, we will see massive corruption in Congress and in the government in general. And I understand that there's a lot of good people in government. I get that. But I'll tell you, here's the other point, though. It's not enough. You can't just say you're a good guy because you haven't done anything wrong. And that's what most people say. Well, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm one of the good guys. No, You've got to stand up and speak out. When you see the guy working next to you, when he's doing something wrong, you've got to expose him. And as long as the good guys in government are too cowardly to expose the bad guys in government, the government will remain in the hands of the bad guys. It's not enough to be good. You also have to be courageous. We're going to take a break for personal announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival, Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. We're going to talk about Senator Ted Cruz and his recent filibuster attempting to cause the government to vote down funding Obamacare in order to keep the government allow the government to continue to be funded under the debt ceiling limit. If any of you'd like to call in and comment on the question, we'll get that subject bouncing in just a second here. If any of you want to jump in on that question or that subject matter, we're at 1-800-596-8191. Again, that's 1-800-596-8191. You can call in, tell us what you think. Here's an article from the Washington Times. It says, headline, as Senator Ted Cruz gives a long speech, Treasury gets short on funding. The spending fight took a step forward when the Senate moved past Senator Ted Cruz's 21-hour filibuster Wednesday afternoon, pushing toward a major vote at the end of this week, that would be today or tomorrow, on a stopgap spending measure that would shift pressure back to the House Republicans. Mr. Cruz said he hadn't given up hope the conservatives, stiffened by his lengthy argument, will rally together and halt the bill in the Senate or defeat it in the House, meaning they want to halt the funding of Obamacare, ultimately. The Treasury Department, now this is where it just gets bizarre for me. The Washington Times says, the Treasury Department said Wednesday that it has less than a month's worth of room to maneuver before it hits the debt limit, dropping yet another major fiscal deadline in the lap of a Congress already stymied over annual spending bills. Now, wait a second. I thought the debt limit was a number rather than a date. You understand that? Treasury says they've got less than a month's worth of room to maneuver. They're not talking about how much money they have. They're talking about time. Now, again, I thought the debt limit was a number rather than a date. In fact, I thought we'd hit the current debt limit of $17 trillion about, I thought we hit it about $17 trillion about 4 or 5 months ago. Huh? We've hit the debt limit, the numerical debt limit, been there, done that. But now I learn that the debt limit, which presumably should not have lasted beyond the end of the fiscal year on September 30th, could actually last at least several more weeks into October. So my question to you, Melody, is this. Is the debt limit a number, like $17 trillion, or is it a date, like September 30th? If it's a number, like $17 trillion, we at least know what the debt limit is. If it's a date, like September 30th, or maybe October 19th or some stuff, we don't even know what that date limit is, do we? How can there be a limit that's unknown? I feel like one of the twins in the old Certs commercials. Some of you may remember it. A lot of you might not. I don't know.
I don't.
Yeah, huh? You remember it. I know you remember it. Where one twin says, I think Certs are breath mint. And the other twin says, I think Certs are candy mint. And some guy drops in and says, stop, stop, you're both right. Except that in our discussion of the debt limit.
Actually, it wasn't Certs.
What was it?
Gum. It was chewing gum. Double mint. Double your pleasure.
No. It was never double mint. It was never double mint. They had the two little packages of Certs, and they'd click them together. All right? They didn't click two packages of gum together. You said you didn't remember the commercial, and you were partly correct. I knew you'd seen the commercial, but you didn't correctly remember it. All right? So you're right about that. Didn't exactly remember it, but you're old enough to have seen it, Melody. That's the point, isn't it?
It's a double mint gum.
All right. In any case, in our discussion about debt limit, I say it's not a numerical limit. Numerical limit. And you say it's not a date limit. So I'm waiting for somebody to jump in to say, stop, stop, you're both right. If the debt limit is not a numerical limit. In other words, not $17 trillion because we hit that 4 or 5 months ago and the government has continued. They say they aren't spending more than that, but you know they are. You know they're lying about it. If it's not a numerical limit, and if the debt limit is not a time limit, then what exactly is the debt limit? Is it even a limit, or is it just an illusion of a limit? Insofar as the debt limit's imposed by law, insofar as the government does not recognize a numerical limit or a time limit, does the government also not recognize an obligation to obey the law? If government isn't bound to obey the law, why should you and I? Now, some people say that's kind of a radical question, but former Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once observed, our government teaches the whole people by its example. If the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. It invites anarchy. As government's refusal to recognize the debt limit inspired contempt for the law? Has it invited each of us to become lawless? Has our government invited anarchy? What do you think, Maldi?
Well, it's certainly inviting a lot of things. I believe they've been able to finance a lot of this. Is I believe they were taking part of the government's pensions. They were in there raiding another account, but they're good at raiding accounts, just like they raided Social Security in the 90s. That's the only way Bill Clinton had a budget, a balanced budget. They raided Social Security in the 90s, but stuck in a whole bunch of IOUs, and I guess they're doing the same right now. So, I mean, that's the way they're used to doing business, and I guess they have the first as far as they'll be. I guess there's three sections. A partial government shutdown next week, It would basically still leave the health care issue in place and rolling along. Then I guess it's whether they will defund it. And I think this is also confusing for so many people, and it's got to be just as confusing for those in Washington also. I don't think any of them know what they're doing. Well, we already know that.
Yeah.
And then the so I was also reading about, I'm going to go back a little bit on the Cruz, on Senator Ted Cruz, on his, he did get a lot of people calling the phone numbers. And what I also thought was interesting is he encouraged folks to Twitter. I mean, I'm not a Twitter person. I don't even know, I wouldn't even know how to begin. The Twitter and Facebook to make comments and to go to these politicians' websites. And you mentioned not too long ago, Al, about how the internet has changed politicians, that they can't lie anymore. I think that was a, was that a Kerry comment, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important that these comments are shown on Twitter from the people. Because now the politicians can't say, well, we didn't get calls. Now it's right there logged in from the people and their,
you know,
views.
And the Twitter thing is interesting because technically, again, I don't do any Twittering either. I'm too old to Twitter, Melody. You get to a certain time
Twitter,
in life.
Twitter and, or twerking?
I don't Twitter and I don't twerk. I get a little too long in the tooth for either of that. But it is like an instant straw poll. It's not necessarily a poll conducted by Gallup or any of the other polling organizations, and we can speculate whether the polls were a little bit contrived or biased or manipulated or whatever. There is something going on Twitter, for example, where you can find out, you can make a pretty good estimate of what public sentiment is on a particular subject just by watching Twitter responses to a particular subject over a period of, who knows, a couple hours. Day or two, I don't know. And all of a sudden you see, these are the percentages. I think that information is available. Again, I don't do any Twittering, so I'm a little too mature, long in the tooth to Twitter, but I think it's good things. We learn the truth. That's the most important thing. We're not just subject to listen to what someone tells us and automatically believe. We have the opportunity to find the truth if we care to listen to a number of different sources, and we say, wait a second, which one of these sources makes sense? You know, we can listen to the evening news on CBS and the rest of that. Does that make sense to you? Okay. What about, Rush Limbaugh? Does he make sense to you? What about, we can point to any number of different, speakers, spokesmen, whatever, including ourselves. But the truth is available. There's plenty of lies, there's plenty of deception, but the truth is, perhaps for the first time in history, it's available to the ordinary American, the ordinary citizen, the ordinary man or woman, if you want to make the effort to find it. It's there. You got to do a little hunt. It doesn't just fall in your lap. But if you look, you will find that truth. So pretty amazing stuff. And it's got to be scary for government. I don't know how government can function if they're stripped of their capacity to lie to the American people. You know, you mentioned Kerry before, and he was speaking, I don't remember to the source, I don't remember to the audience, it may have been the United Nations, but I don't recall. And he was advocating the need, it may have been television interview program, I don't recall. But he's advocating the need to go bomb Syria. And you could see it in his face. He was lying, and he knew he was lying, and he was embarrassed to be put in a position where he had to lie about this. And you could see a semblance of conscience in his face, where he was doing the company job. His heart wasn't in it, and it was interesting. It's going to be hard to find politicians who are constantly available to the camera, who can lie effortlessly and convincingly every time they speak. It's going to be increasingly difficult. The result will be the only people who are going to make it into Washington may be those who have the strongest capacity to function as a psychopath. Look you in the eye and tell you lies. Make you believe them. Yeah. And certainly there's one guy in particular that comes to mind who fills that bill, in my opinion, and that's President Obama. At one point, he told his former spiritual advisor, I don't remember, he was the head of the church in Chicago who'd made some radical statements about the United States, black man, the rest of that, made some radical statements about the United States. He told him at one point, he said, the problem with you is you don't want to lie. And the implication, of course, is Obama has no objection to lying. He just sees it as a device. Not about right and wrong, truth or lies. It's about what works. And he does a good job of that. I have to give the president his due. But we have to become more alert to picking up on who's telling the truth, who's lying, and we need to make it our business to try to get people into office that are telling the truth and are going to keep telling the truth, even when faced with the almost irresistible temptations that can come your way if you can get into Congress, into the Senate, into the White House. Pretty hard to resist that. Now, the temptations in that, there are a lot more than the apple in the Garden of Eden. You understand? I mean, this is tempting stuff. So, in any case, we have to do our business. We have to do our business, and we have to learn to be more astute. We have to learn to identify people who tend to lie. And if we're sensible and smart, we have to be able to root them out, even if they might be favoring our own apparent interests. All right? You can't let yourself be deceived by someone just because he or she is singing your favorite song. It may very well be that they've just learned how to sing that song just because they know they can use it to con you. You got to find out who's telling the truth. And if you're, and just stay away from the liars. I don't care if they're working for you, they're working against you. Stay away from the liars. That would be my recommendation. What else, Melody?
I got a question for you. Why did the founding fathers make impeachment so difficult? Or did the difficulties come after with changes?
Well, I think the reason may be that when you're put in a position of, when you're put in a political position, there's a lot of people tugging at your cape, and you're getting pushed and pulled in multiple directions. And as a result, politics is an inherently, immoral, or at least amoral business. Very difficult. I can sit here and tell people to elect only the people that are honest, but it's hard to do when you get into politics. So, should we hold politicians responsible every time they tell a lie? I'd like to say the answer is yes, but the founding fathers, perhaps they were smarter. They said, you got to put up with a certain amount of this nonsense. Because the system isn't going to work if everybody gets jailed every time they say something that perhaps is untrue. You know, there's room for mistakes, there's room for differences of opinion, and you've got to account for that in the impeachment process. But you don't necessarily have to account for it in the voting process, and you can hold people accountable for whatever lies they've told or created, and in my opinion, we should. We're out of time, Melody.
All right.
I want to thank all these people for listening to the program. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be